quality number 38 of Krishna. He is Sukhi. He's happy. Krishna's always happy. That's a good quality, isn't it? Stay high forever. Krishna's high. High in the sense he's above everyone. He's also high, feeling euphoric. All the time. Krishna's always happy. This is a common word that we find in Bhagavad Gita. Often, along with the word dukkha. So it's sukh and dukkh. In material terms, that means sukh means to have Janmaishvarya Shudrasri, Haiba. Well, these are various opulences, but it means to have various facilities for material enjoyment. And to have good health and nice family, all these things are considered sukh, happy situation at home. It doesn't so much refer to the feeling of happiness as the facilities. Krishna is described as sukhi, happy. Because he's enjoying all facilities for enjoyment. He's a big enjoyer. And he's not touched even by a trace of sorrow. Not even a scent, the word is given, a slight smell. There's not even a slight hint of any unhappiness in Krishna. So a person who is always enjoying without even a touch of unhappiness is called sukhi, happy. In the material world, whatever happiness is there is always mixed with sorrow. And is also always followed by sorrow. And according to Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, actually, adyandavantakonteya, in the beginning, middle and end, the happiness which arises from interaction with the sense objects. Yehi sangsparshaja bhoga dukkha yodhya evate. Adyantavantakonteya nateshu ramate buddha. He describes in Bhagavad Gita that the happiness that arises from sense enjoyment, it's very background, its very source is misery. The very nature of this material world is miserable. So the so-called happiness of this material world, it's simply born of and a transformation of misery. Beginning, middle and end, it's all miserable. So that bhoga is all miserable. But Krishna's bhoga is all blissful. Krishna's bliss springs from the Haladini Shakti. Everything comes from Krishna, and Krishna's energies, they serve him. And they give back to him. So Krishna is always happy. The bliss potency. He has his bliss potency. So, an example of this. Excuse me. Here's a statement. Sung by a bard. You know what a bard is? Means a professional praiser. One who sings praises professionally. They don't have them in Slovenia. Probably must have had them in the past when they had kings. But the days of kings are long gone. So, someone whose occupation is to praise the king. That's what he does. So this is a verse sung by a bard in which he says that, describing Krishna's happiness in terms of his facilities for enjoyment, the quantity of your jeweled ornaments, Krishna, cannot even be imagined by Kubera. Kubera. Kubera is the treasurer of the demigods, said to be. He's rich. Very rich. But the wealth of Krishna is not even imaginable by Kubera. The singing and dancing taking place at your door cannot be imagined by Indra in his dreams even. Indra has got the best facility for enjoying dancing girls. But he cannot imagine the kind of dancing and singing that Krishna enjoys. At your side constantly, Krishna, are beautiful women who enjoy all your attractive limbs, who are decorated with the tips of your moon-like fingernails, that's an erotic description we could say, and who are thus superior to Gauri. Gauri means the wife of Shiva. It's another name of Durga. If you'll see pictures of her seated on her tiger, then she's golden color, so she's called Gauri. In this world there is no enjoyer like you. So this is as usual with the Sanskrit verses, there's lots of subtleties involved there which are described here by Jiva Goswami. Shashikala, that's girl's name. In India still today some girls are called that. Shashikala. It literally means a moonbeam. Or it can mean one, here in this context, who is decorated with the tips of the fingernails or the marks of the fingernails, because Krishna's fingernails are like moon. Or in reference to Gauri, it means the wife of Lord Shiva. It means one who possesses only one sliver of the moon. Sliver means like a thin slice, like you see on the new moon night if you're not living in Ljubljana. If you're living in the country, you might see the moon. It becomes very thin, like a tiny little slice. So, Lord Shiva has the moon. But only, not the whole moon, only the little bit of the moon. And Gauri is his wife. So, Kanta Saravanga Bhaja means one who enjoys the attractive limbs of Krishna. Or in reference to the wife of Shiva who shares half the body of her beloved. So in other words, Krishna, he enjoys many women who are superior to Gauri. Because they enjoy all of Krishna's limbs. Whereas Gauri, she only enjoys half of Shiva's body. And she has got, because she's the enjoyer of her husband's body, and he's got a little bit, a little slice of the moon on his head, she can enjoy a little bit of the moon, but the women who are with Krishna, they enjoy his fingernails, which are like many moons. So they enjoy many moons. So it's highly ornamental language. It might be difficult to appreciate. Some of the things, they may be difficult to appreciate by people from a different culture. Just like sometimes it's said that the beautiful women, it's said in Sanskrit verses, they move like an elephant. So you may think, well, that's a strange, an elephant's a kind of gross animal. But you see, an elephant, it actually moves very gracefully. So some of the things are difficult to understand, maybe. Another example of Krishna, how he's always happy. There's no trace of sorrow in Krishna. There's not even any question of any unhappiness in Krishna. So this one verse here is being addressed to wives of the Brahmanas. That it's about Krishna. They're interested in Krishna. Not even a trace of sorrow can touch Krishna. So what is suffering? Well, when there's destruction, either of one's own possessions, one's loved persons, it's if your close relative or your child dies, it's cause of distress. But in Krishna, if you yourself die, that's also a cause of distress. But in Krishna, there's no destruction, there's no declining, there's no suffering in household affairs. That's only possible for Krishna. No cause of fear. No worry. One name of Krishna is Nischinta. No worry. No problem. Everything's fine all the time. We never see Krishna looking worried. He's always blissful. Always happy. Krishna doesn't even know any suffering of this world. It means he doesn't experience it at all. Krishna has no suffering. It's almost unimaginable to us, isn't it? Because we're all the time suffering in this material world. There is a state that we can also attain by Krishna's mercy, where there's no suffering whatsoever. Not even the slightest. That's how Krishna exists, always happy. So what does he do? You may wonder, what do you do? If there's no suffering, what do you do? What's left? That's what the Mayavadis think. You finish suffering and then there's nothing to do. Because that's all they can imagine is suffering. They cannot imagine happiness. They think that happiness means just stop suffering, just turn off, just cease to exist. But Krishna has no suffering. Not only is he not suffering, he's not just in the negative position, but he's in the positive position of being eternally engaged in amusing himself in Vrindavan with beautiful women. Well, that's the highest happiness, isn't it? To have beautiful women. But in the material world, beautiful women, they are like a trap because they appear to be a cause of great happiness, but ultimately it's a cause of great suffering. But for Krishna, there's no suffering. The women he enjoys are Ananda Chinmaya Rasa Pratibhavita Bihi. They're expansions of his bliss potency. So the beautiful women of this world are a perverted reflection of Krishna's gopis, who are all blissful. They only give bliss. No suffering whatsoever. Krishna's women, they are perfect, the best of friends, and hold the highest love for Krishna. So what could be more enjoyable? It's not possible to imitate Krishna, because that kind of woman is only attached to Krishna. So we can be attached to such women by serving them. Their love is centered on Krishna. Krishna is the object of love. So this statement was made by a messenger of Krishna who was sent to the wives of the Brahmanas. There's nothing to cause in fear in him. There's nothing that can make Krishna afraid or anxious. Everything about him is perfect in all respects. So, another term here, we already had Sharanagata Palaka, the protector of the surrendered souls. And I extrapolated from that the common term Bhakta Vatsala, one who is Vatsala, means he's the protector, the affectionate protector of his devotees. And here the term is given, similar term, quality number 39 listed of Krishna, Bhakta Suhrit, means he's the friend of his devotees. In one lecture, Srila Prabhupada explained that there are three kinds of friends. Mitra means a general well-wisher. Bandhu means friend. And Suhrit means heart-to-heart friend. So Krishna's friendship is like that, heart-to-heart. Heart-to-heart friendship. Suhridam sarva-bhutanam. Krishna has heart-to-heart love for all living beings. That's only possible for Krishna. We can only love a few people. I mean, actually have a direct loving relationship with a few people. But Krishna feels for every living being, heart to heart. So, there are two ways in which Krishna, this quality of being a heart to heart friend of his devotees, friendly to his devotees. One way is that he's easily served, and another that he's a friend of his servant. Again, as I mentioned previously, not today, but previously when I was talking about these qualities, that some of these qualities, they may be overlapping or almost synonymous. So Krishna is, it's already been mentioned that Krishna, he accepts a little service as being very important. So here again, he's easily served. He's very easily served. We don't. An example of being easily served is the. This verse is quoted in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Tulasi dalamatrena jalasya chukena cha vikrinite swam atmanam. Bhakti bhyo bhaktavatsalaha. This word comes. Bhaktavatsala. If devotees, they offer only water and tulasi leaves to the Lord, then the Lord, being affectionate to them, places himself under the control of his devotees. Just tulasi and water. Easy. Some people worship Shalagram, like that. They do puja in a few minutes. Just offer water, tulasi. That's all. It's actually sufficient for, at least as far as the rituals are concerned, to offer tulasi and water. This verse is quoted in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Advaita Acharya, considering how to bring Krishna to this world, worshipped, considering this verse, he worshipped Shalagram, tulasi and Ganges water. And in this way, he thought, I'll bring Krishna under control and I'll bring him to the world and he'll deliver the world. So Krishna, vikrinite swam atmanam, he sells his soul. Krishna sells himself to his devotees. Makes himself the property of his devotees. Even what may appear to be a little service, it's not a very difficult thing to offer Krishna, tulasi leaf and water. But Krishna feels so much obligated that he's prepared to give himself to his devotee. An example of being a friend of his servant, It's from the first canto of Bhagavatam, describing Krishna when Bhishma had made the promise that I will fight Arjuna so seriously that either Arjuna will be killed or Krishna will have to give up his promise not to fight. The only way Arjuna is going to survive is if Krishna protects him, by fighting me. So if he fights me, then Krishna gives up his promise not to take any weapons in the battle. So Bhishma made a vow by which either Bhishma's vow would be broken, either Bhishma would kill Arjuna or Krishna would have to break his promise not to fight, not to raise any weapon. So Bhishma knew that Krishna, his quality of being bhaktavatsala, protective to his devotees, he's more concerned with protecting his devotees than keeping his own promise and keeping his own word and keeping his own good name. So Krishna became blamed for breaking his promise, but he wasn't blamed for neglecting his devotee. He couldn't, in that situation where Bhishma attacked Arjuna so seriously that Arjuna was in danger of his life, Krishna just, he didn't care about his promise anymore. He just forgot his promise. It became insignificant to him. Didn't matter to him at all. All right, I promised. Anyway, what does it matter? I have to save Arjuna. So, this Prabhupada's made a very, his translations are very beautiful. Fulfilling my, this is Bhishma speaking about Krishna. Fulfilling my desire and sacrificing his own promise, he, Krishna, got down from the chariot, took up its wheel and ran toward me hurriedly, just as a lion goes to kill an elephant. He even dropped his upper garment on the way. In other words, Krishna wasn't aware that his cloth was falling off. He was so angry at Bhishma that Krishna's cloth fell down. In extreme emotions, when forgets it, he becomes unaware of anything else. So Krishna's anger against Bhishma was so strong that he wasn't aware that his cloth was falling down from him. He was so angry. So Bhishma stated this. When Bhishma was preparing to leave this world, he praised Krishna in this way. Says, may seem surprising. Oh yeah, Krishna, yeah, he came, he was going to kill me. Oh, he's so wonderful. It's a strange way to praise someone, it may seem. I was fighting there and he promised not to fight, but he broke his promise and he came to kill me. What a great person. Bhishma is praising him for something which others, they wouldn't praise him. He broke his promise. That's the first thing. And then the second thing, he came to kill me. And why are you praising him? Because Bhishma is praising him. He came to kill me because he loves Arjuna so much. Even he loves me, but he loves Arjuna more. Just see how attached he is to his devotee. So you see, the non-devotees, how can they understand Bhagavatam? How can they understand Krishna? It's not possible. Krishna can be understood only from the platform of bhakti. One who doesn't have bhakti, they can't understand all these things. What are the intricacies of bhakti? Ahariva, what is that? Ahariva gatiya premna. The movements of prema, of love, they're crooked like a snake. If you see a snake crawling, you can't. It's the way it goes is very difficult. It doesn't go just like straight. There's some, like a caterpillar, they arch up their body and they go like this, right? They have the same long, thin body, similar to a snake, but they move like this forward. But the snake, it curls its body like this. And it, doesn't go exactly, even then its trajectory is not exactly straight. So it's difficult to know where it's going. So like that, the movements of love of Krishna, it's not straight, it's all crooked, just like you're reading. Valitam madhuram. Krishna's crookedness is very sweet. So his body is crooked, not straight. And his character is not, it's not possible to measure everything about Krishna, because Krishna is impelled by love, which is not logical. So Bhishma, his love, he's expressing his love for Krishna. You see, he's so wonderful. He came to kill me. And he broke his promise. You see, he's so wonderful. He's such an amazing person. He's praising him. And other people will think, what kind of praise is that? So Krishna broke his promise. And Bhishma deliberately made a vow to make Krishna break his promise. Either he breaks his promise, he made a promise not to take up weapons in the battle, he'll have to break that promise, or he will have to stand and watch Arjuna being killed. But then his promise is that he already promised. What is that? He's Kaunteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashati. Arjuna, you go and tell everyone, my devotee is never destroyed. So he already promised. In Bhagavad Gita, we all heard it, we're standing here on the battlefield. He told Arjuna, my devotee is a vanquished. He already promised it. So, and he also promised not to take up a weapon in this battle. So I'm going to make him break his promise. And what kind of love is that? What kind of devotee is it that wants to make Krishna look like a liar, incapable, untruthful? That's already liar, as already said. So again, you see, how is Bhishma's love for Krishna expressed? Because Bhishma is demonstrating Krishna's love for his devotees by making Krishna break his promise. So this Bhakta Suhrit, yeah. Another thing was that he protected Bhishma's promise. Bhishma made a promise. So he said, either I'll kill Arjuna or Krishna will have to defend Arjuna. So he maintained. Krishna could have, by his potencies, he could have done something else. He could have, you know, made an earthquake, or there's so many things Krishna could have done to protect Arjuna without personally having to fight. But he upheld Bhishma's vow, Krishna upheld Bhishma's vow, even at the expense of breaking his own vow, which Bhishma had planned it like this. And he was so absorbed in protecting, Kaunteya Pratijanihi Name Bhakta Pranashati, he was so absorbed in protecting Arjuna, his cloth fell off. The earth shook as he came toward me to kill me. He was like a lion attacking an elephant. The lion and the elephant may fight in the jungle, so they're both very powerful animals. They're both very dangerous animals. For humans, they're much more powerful than a human, an unarmed human. Apart from Bharat, who was described in Bharat, as a child, he used to kill lions just in play with his naked hands. But for most people, if you meet a lion in the forest, then, well, that's it. You're finished. It's all over for you, not for the lion. And elephant also is a very dangerous animal. Sometimes an elephant, they don't even mean to, but they just kill someone. That happened with the Lakshmi, the Padayatra elephant once. She didn't mean to, she just stepped on someone and killed them. So What is their anger? An anger. Bhishma, he's comparing himself to an elephant. But when an elephant and a lion meet, the elephant's much bigger, but still the lion is more ferocious. So the lion kills the elephant, generally, if there's a battle between a lion and an elephant. So Bhishma compares himself to an elephant. And Krishna's like a lion coming to attack him. So Bhishma was thinking, actually, you know, I was offensive to both Krishna and Arjuna by attacking Arjuna. Attacking Arjuna, in that situation, means to attack Krishna, because Krishna is the charioteer. And the charioteers, the driver of the chariot, they're in a very dangerous position. They're standing right in the line of fire. So it's the job of the rati, the fighter on the chariot, to protect the sarati, or the chariot driver. So to attack Arjuna, it implies that Krishna is also attacked, because Krishna, as the chariot driver, gets in the line of fire. So Bhishma saying, I was very offensive. I attacked Krishna and Arjuna. But Krishna is very kind. He detected some trace of bhakti in me, and therefore he's come to see me at the last moment, despite my being offensive. So this is some little insight into how Krishna, just some indication of the kind of love that Krishna has for his devotees, how much Krishna feels for his devotees. Then a similar quality, number 40, prema vasha, one who is controlled by love. Only by love. Krishna is controlled by love. He's the supreme controller. No one can control Krishna. But by love. Not even by service. Not even. It has to be loving service. It's not that one can bring Krishna under control just by any service. Just like Duryodhana wanted to oblige Krishna to accept his, Duryodhana's, service. He wanted to make Krishna oblige him, but Krishna refused. No. You're not my devotee. I won't take service from you. So, an example. Krishna felt intense ecstasy simply by touching the body of his dear friend, the wise Brahmana, and Sudama. And thus he shed tears of love. Another example. When Mother Yashoda, she was trying so hard to catch Krishna. Krishna was running away. This is Damodar Leela. And her whole body became covered with perspiration, and the flowers are falling out of her hair, the comb was falling out of his hair, and Krishna saw, oh, my mother's trying so hard to catch me, so she can punish me. You poor mother. All right, you catch me and tie me up. Otherwise, no one can tie Krishna. But he's tied by the ropes of love. That's the... Alright, looks like it's a bit difficult for most devotees to stay awake. Shall I finish here? Is it? Boats? Go on till 11 o'clock? Okay. 15 minutes more. I can put some eggs in your eyes. Another 15 minutes. Sarva Shubhankaraha. He works for the benefit of all living beings. Therefore, he is the benefactor of all. Krishna has been described as particularly the friend of his devotees, but actually, he is Yes, Suhridam Sarvabhutanam. He's the best friend of everyone. So particularly of his devotees, but he likes everyone, ultimately. So an example of Krishna, or a verse describing how Krishna is kind to everyone. Krishna gave benefit to the, he benefited the sages by the display of his qualities manifested in Dwaraka. Vinoda, he made them feel very happy. And he benefited the wicked people by he benefited the dharmic people, those who are followers of religious principles, by destroying the wicked. The wicked people who tried to introduce adharma into the world, Krishna destroyed them. And you may say, all right, well, he benefited the religious people. How did he benefit the irreligious people? If he's killing them. That's how he benefited them, by killing them. Because if they're killed by Krishna, they attain salvation. And they also stop performing any more sinful activities, which would cause them to suffer in the future. So, and then a rhetorical question. To whom did Krishna not give benefit? In other words, Krishna benefited everybody. This is a statement of Uddhava after Krishna's disappearance from the earth. Yeah, Krishna benefited the sages because they are Atmarama. They're already feeling happiness in themselves. So they're feeling, oh, everything's okay. But Krishna, by performing his pastimes, he brings them to a higher level. That even though they're satisfied in themselves, by displaying his pastimes, Krishna attracts them to him. That's Shukadeva Goswami. He gives the example of himself. He was asked, why did you undertake the study? Have you already self-realized? So why did you study such a big book as Srimad Bhagavatam? And he gave the example. Well, even if someone's satisfied in themselves, they become attracted to the glorious qualities of Hari. Parinishtito Pinarangunye. Even though he was situated in impersonal realization, he became attracted to Krishna. Pratapi. Then pratap, it means, tapa means heat or pain. We have the word tapasya. It's translated as austerity. It means accepting pain or difficulty. So one who inflicts pain on others, it's one of the qualities of Krishna. Now how about that? We just heard how Krishna's very, he's the benefactor of everyone. And the next quality is given is that he gives great pain on the enemy. Person is called glorious or of great what's the word? Pratap, great might. If he's can inflict, if he's becomes famous for inflicting pain on the enemy with great valor, astonishing valor. So in our modern or postmodern liberal perverted outlook, we may think that, well, killing people isn't very nice. Killing animals, well, that's okay. But killing people, that's not very nice. But that's praised as a quality. for Krishna to kill the demons, it's a good quality. The idea that wicked people should not be punished, that is not part of Vedic culture. To be a leader, to be a king in Vedic culture, where there are king, where there are thieves, if there's any thief in the state, the king is completely useless. If the king can, if he can allow even one thief in his state, in Vedic culture it would be considered the king is totally useless, totally unqualified. But here they, you see, the modern society, there's so many thieves running around, and the leaders themselves are thieves. That they discovered in England, that all the, there's a big scandal going on in England, in Britain. Not just England, not only the English, it's the Welsh, the Northern Irish, and the Scottish also. They're two major parties, and both sides, they're just stealing from the people. Surprise, surprise. It's going on everywhere. It goes on in Italy also. It's famous for that. So, and they're thinking, you know, you see, our leaders, we're British, you see, they're very honest. They're not at all. They're all thieves. That's stated in Bhagavata. What is that? That's stated in... What is that verse? Prajas tu bhakshiyashanti mlecha rajanya rupina. The mlechas, low-class meat-eaters, they will take the position of kings in Kali Yuga and devour the citizens. Chaurasya vritti. They will take up the livelihood of thieves. The king's supposed to kill all the thieves, but in the modern age, the biggest thieves, they become the kings. And in India, literally, so many of the so-called democratic system is, they're actually the biggest criminals. They become the, they get elected because they manipulate anyway. So such people should be killed, actually. If there was any real king, if there was any person, we talk about leadership qualities, if there's anyone of actual leadership qualities in the state, then they would kill all the demons, beginning with the leaders. In fact, one person I know in India, a writer, writes on political subjects, he told me that he met the President of India once, and he was telling, this writer was telling him what he, his analysis of problems in India. And the President said, no, you got it all wrong. He said, if you want any real benefit for India, the first thing you have to do is take all the politicians, including myself, line us up against a wall and shoot us all. That's what this man told me. And this Dr. Naina, he's a practicing doctor, he said, I'll quote you on that. And the President said, you can if you like, I'll deny it. So what hope? These elections, what hope, you know. If one cow is killed, then it's in the state, it's a disaster. It's a cause of the greatest disaster that could be imaginable. It's a total what's the word? Scar on the whole claim to leadership of any leader. How can any leader allow that? It's a total disqualification, and they themselves are encouraging thousands to be killed every day. And who are you going to vote for? Cow slaughterer one or cow slaughterer two? To vote is sinful, practically. They say it's your duty as a citizen to vote. Who for? Satan number one or his brother? Really? So, Krishna, he's not such a... pseudo-liberal, be nice to all except the animals kind of useless so-called leader. He kills the demons. Of course, in Kali Yuga, we're not recommended to even attempt to do that, except by the method of killing the demoniac mentality, by inducing them to take up Krishna consciousness. But anyway, Krishna, as the ideal, he killed of great pain to the enemy. And Krishna chose his enemies wisely. It means we should know who should be our enemy. The enemies really, this material world means there will be enemies. But we should know who to be an enemy of. We should know what is right and what is wrong. So, Krishna is described here, again, in another allegorical verse. Krishna illuminates the world with his brilliancy, which is like the sun. So at that time, the darkness of the mountain caves becomes the shelter for the terrible demons who are like owls. In other words, Krishna is so brilliant and powerful, he's like the sun. So when the sun comes up, the owls, you know where the owl is? Okay, very good. The owl goes into some dark place because the owl doesn't like the sun. He goes to a mountain cave or a very dark place. So when the light of Krishna comes out, then all the demons, they flee away. Krishna swadhamo pagate dharma gyana divisa kalo nashta drishamesha purana kaudhanodita. Krishna in Kali Yuga appears as holy name and also as Srimad Bhagavatam. So persons who have lost their vision due to the darkness, it means the darkness means there's no knowledge, no dharma in Kali Yuga, but that is Krishna, is Srimad Bhagavatam. So by distribution of Srimad Bhagavatam and the holy name, that means the whole society will be Krishnaized. And all bad elements will go away. So that's what we're supposed to do, is distribute Srimad Bhagavatam and the holy name. Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, all these books. So, before this, it's already been described Prabhava, which is a similar quality to pratap. Prabhav means having power, the power of conquering all. So the difference between prabhav and pratapi means pratapi is like the practical application of prabhav, one who becomes famous, one who doesn't simply have the power, but who becomes famous for practically utilizing it. All right, so I'll finish there for now. Maybe this afternoon. What's the program in the evening?
6:30, Vidura Arati, then class.
So there's no program now until 6:30, except we're going out now for Harinam. Yeah. Soon we'll go for. Maybe in the afternoon I can come in the temple. What time is the afternoon Arati?
6:30.
There's no 4 o'clock.
No.
Is it? What time is the deities closed? They never sleep in the day. Oh, but I read in Chaitanya Charitamrita that Lord Chaitanya takes rest after lunch. So, alright. So, shall we? If anyone wants that at 4 o'clock, I'll come here again, and then 4 to 6:30 we can continue. If anyone's interested, they can come. So we can read more of the qualities of Krishna. And for anyone who might be on the other side of that camera, somewhere sitting in who knows where, some other part of the world, 4 o'clock. I'll come here at 4 o'clock. You can. Can you do the web broadcasting? at 4 o'clock. That means 5 hours from now. It's now 11 o'clock in the morning. So 4 o'clock in the afternoon. In India, that'll be the evening, so they'll be busy with the temple activities. So anyway, 5 hours from now, we'll continue. Let's sing Jai Radhe, Jai Krishna, Jai Vrindavan to finish this session. Do you have the song books? You'd like to pass that out? And then we'll go for Harinam, right? In the streets of Ljubljana.